Storylines Midwest is a project of the American Library Association, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities and Barnes & Noble Booksellers.
Small towns. They've been stereotyped as picturesque and cozy, vilified for being backwards and stifling.
Today we'll find out what small town life is really like, and what it's like in Gopher Prairie, the fictional small town in Sinclair Lewis's Main Street.
From Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Storylines Midwest. I'm Charity Nebbe.
And I'm Keith Taylor. Coming up, the myths and realities of Midwestern small town life. We'll look at the book Main Street, and we'll meet an anthropologist who studies us.
And we'd like to hear from you with your take on Sinclair Lewis, small town living, and your questions at 866-255-2762. This is Storylines Midwest.
This is America, a town of a few thousand in a region of wheat and corn and dairies and little groves. The town is, in our tale, called Gopher Prairie, Minnesota, but its Main Street is the continuation of Main Streets everywhere. The story would be the same in Ohio or Montana, in Kansas or Kentucky or Illinois, and not very differently would it be told up York State or in the Carolina Hills.
Pam Dauber, reading from Sinclair Lewis's Main Street.
Main Street came out in 1920, and at the time it was considered to be an indictment of small-town America. In it, Carol Kennicott is a progressive young turn-of-the-century woman from the big city, Minneapolis. She falls in love with Will Kennicott, a small-town doctor from Gopher Prairie, Minnesota, and she's attracted by his rough kindness and his boyish enthusiasm. She is determined to culture him, smooth his rough edges, and civilize the prairie village where he has his practice. But when the honeymoon is over and their train is pulling into the Gopher Prairie station, she's already having doubts about her marriage and her destination.
She saw that Gopher Prairie was merely an enlargement of all the hamlets which they had been passing. Only to the eyes of a Kennicott was it exceptional. The huddled low wooden houses broke the plains scarcely more than would a hazel thicket. The fields swept up to it, past it. It was unprotected and unprotecting. There was no dignity in it, not any hope of greatness. Only the tall red grain elevator and a few tinny church steeples rose from the mass. It was a frontier camp. It was not a place to live in, not possibly, not conceivably. The people, they'd be as drab as their houses, as flat as their fields. She couldn't stay here. She would have to wrench loose from this man and flee. She peeped at him. She was at once helpless before his mature fixity and touched by his excitement as he sent his magazine skittering across the aisle, swooped up their bags, and came up with flushed face and gloated, "Here we are."
Carol sets out to bring what she believes is culture and beauty to Gopher Prairie, and in her zeal, she alienates her neighbors and overlooks the beauty and goodness that is already there, in her husband, in the town, and on Main Street.
This is Storylines Midwest. I'm Keith Taylor, here with Charity Nebbe. You can join our conversation at 866-255-2762. Our first guest today is Richard Lingeman. Richard is senior editor at The Nation, and he's the author of Sinclair Lewis, Rebel from Main Street, which is due out in January. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you.
It's good to
nice
have you.
Nice to be here.
Good.
Good.
Not a lot of people have been paying attention to Sinclair Lewis for the last 40 years, and I'm kind of wondering, you just finished a big book on him, and I'm kind of wondering what drew you to the man.
Well, personally, it goes back to my almost college days, which is more years ago than I care to remember. But anyway, I came from a small town, and when he went east to college, like Lewis, he came from a small town in Minnesota and went to Yale. And I guess I read Main Street, and it struck me that it told me about the small town I came from, and it helped me understand it. And I was always drawn to this novel because it had so much truth about small towns in it. And actually, in college, I wrote a senior paper on Lewis and how he was torn between the Midwest and the East. So it goes back a long way. And more recently, I started writing it. There was another long biography of Lewis by Mark Shore, which I felt was, well, rather hostile to him and personally and to his novels as well. And I thought I could set about to correct this impression, which I think had been destructive to Lewis's reputation.
Well, Sinclair Lewis grew up in Sauk Center, Minnesota, which became the prototype for Main Street. Can you tell us a little bit about his family background there?
Yes, he was the son of a country doctor, Dr. E.J. Lewis, and his birth mother died when he was only five. I think that was kind of a blow to him, and he always kind of mourned her internally. His father remarried, and his stepmother was a very active, what we would call a club woman, I guess, but she was engaged in all the local women's clubs, and there's one club called the Grand Autumn Club, and you see that in Main Street as the Thanatopsis Club, and it's a literary club. And you see, just an example, you see letters from his mother saying, well, this week we're going to cover English literature or something like that. And this same impression Lewis satirizes in recounting the activities of the Grand Autumn Club. Anyway, his stepmother was a very good woman, very active, and so he grew up the third and youngest son, and he was kind of a lonely red-haired boy, kind of spindly and awkward, very imaginative, and the other boys never quite understood him, and he would talk to them and make up games they would that he got from his books, and they never quite understood him. As one of them remembered, Harry, that's what he was called then, Harry, his first name was Harry Sinclair Lewis. Harry never wore a watch, and which he meant Harry never knew the time of day. And that's what the other boys thought of him. But I think he basically loved Sauk Center and wanted to belong there. But at the same time, it was stifling to him and boring, and he wanted to get away as soon as he could. And so even while he was in high school, you can see him yearning to get away to go east to college. And so that's how he ended up at Yale, by pressing his father to send him to Yale.
So he left right after high school?
Yes, he did, yeah. He took a year of sort of a prep school at Oberlin in Ohio to prepare him for the Yale entrance exams, and then he left in 1903.
And did he ever go back to live?
And he never went back to live, no. That would have been impossible for him. He did go back to Minnesota, interestingly, in the 1940s, and we're jumping way ahead here, but his career was sort of in the doldrums, and he was trying to reconnect with his roots. And so he went back and lived, but he lived in Duluth, Minnesota, rather than Sauk Center. But he visited it often when his father was alive, and then afterwards, too.
When Main Street
so he kept in touch. That's all right.
When Main Street first came out in 1920, it was generally reviewed as a sort of indictment of small-town America or a dismissal of Midwestern America. And a lot of people still come away from this book with the sense that Sinclair Lewis hated small towns. I mean, do you think that's a fair assessment of his attitude toward the rural America or semi-rural America?
No, I don't think so. I think Well, he was kind of a, for one thing, he was a very talkative, brilliant, voluble guy, and he's one of these nags, these reformers, these scolds. And he was, after Yale, he became something of a political radical, a socialist, and he wanted to reform. And he wrote Main Street partly not to sort of consign it to the ash heap, but because he thought it could be better. And Carroll tries to reform it, but he thought that she went about it in the wrong way. And of course, she was all alone. She was a woman. She was alone, and she just was a failure at it eventually. But he thought, as the book says, she fought the good fight, and he thought that eventually these towns would become more less provincial and more interesting and have better, less of the ugliness and the filth that Gopher Prairie has. And I think his memories of Gopher Prairie that went into the book were partly taken from when he was growing up, and that was Sauk Center in the 1890s, and it was still had an unpaved street and these false-fronted stores like a Western town, and it was still a bit raw and crude, even though it, in some ways, had a good school system and it was striving to be more cultured, but it was still caught in that time between the late 19th and 20th century. And actually, they didn't pave the Main Street until the 1920s. And so he was writing about that period, but he had conceived the novel. He first conceived it in around 1904 when he came back from Yale, the superior Yale student, and he started looking at it, and he spent a summer there, and he was just bored to tears. And he started saying, "Ah, the village virus. It gets all the good men." He wrote this in his diary. "Gets all good men and true." Mm-hmm. And he met this boredom and this feeling of being trapped and of having nothing to do. And so he conceived a novel called The Village Virus. And he never wrote that. But for the next, 15 years, he kept that novel in his mind. And then in 1916, he was married to a very chic New York woman named Grace Hager, known as Gracie. And he took her back to meet the folks. And I think at that point, he started seeing his small town, his hometown, through her eyes, and also his own eyes. They were both sophisticated New Yorkers by now. He'd been living in New York for about 10 years. And I think then he conceived the idea. In the earlier novel, there was a lawyer who was the hero, and it seemed to be a picture of this lawyer who was interested in books and intellectual things going to seed in a small town. But in 1916, he got the idea of seeing the town through the eyes of the bride who comes home with her husband, her new husband. And so that's how I think the plot for the new version of Main Street began.
You're listening to Storylines Midwest, and we're talking today about Sinclair Lewis and his novel Main Street. And we're talking to Richard Lingaman, who is the author of Sinclair Lewis, Rebel from Main Street, a new biography that will be out in January. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call, 866-255-2762, 866-255-2762. And Richard, when Main Street came out and it was wildly popular, what kind of a response in Sauk Center and within Lewis's family was there?
Well, it's interesting that I think there was certainly, at first the town paper said nothing about it, and then it said, "Well, a local man has written a novel in which some people say they can see a certain Sauk Center personalities, and he stands to make a lot of money from it, and so on. And then it quoted Lewis in another article making a speech saying that he had written out of his experiences in Sauk Center. And I think a lot of people were very angry at him for doing it. And people purported to see themselves in the novel. Now, actually, I think Lewis was a kind of writer who made characters who were composites. And he took, and there was really no recognizable contemporary Sauk Center person in it. Though they could see some of the stores are very similar, and the look of Main Street was very similar. But he kept actual characters out. The character of Doc Kennicott was in some ways close to his father, and Carol has situations that were similar to his stepmother's when he imagined when she first came there. The town... Then there was all this sort of muttering and rumbling against the book, but then the local editor ran a story with Sinclair Lewis saying, oh, no, I wasn't writing about Sauk Center in this town. This was a composite town. And it's true. He had researched a lot of towns. He had made a trip across America after going to visiting Sauk Center with his new wife. And he continued to research small towns, so in that sense it was a composite. And he had read a lot about small towns. He had really made this the most complete book on small towns ever written. It was, in that sense, it was kind of almost a work of sociology. So Sauk Center gradually forgave him, and he came back in 1921. He said, well, people don't seem too mad at me. And his father... in his letters, his father says, oh, some folks just came by from Michigan. They wanted to talk about you, and I told them all the gossip about you. And his mother, his stepmother, was just really proud of him because the both of them, they didn't know what was going to come of this young man, because for years he was floundering around trying to write, and suddenly he was a big success. So they were proud of him, and the town... Even though there was an undercurrent of resentment, they decided strategically to become the original Main Street. As if you go to Sauk Center now, it's a very pretty town, clean town, and they do have Main Street is no longer Main Street, it's the original Main Street. And Third Avenue is no longer Third Avenue, it's Sinclair Lewis Avenue. And they have the Sinclair Lewis Boyhood Home and the Tourist Center, and they have Sinclair Lewis Days every year. And so... I think they made a good, smart move there to become famous as the home of Main Street. In other words, they reconciled themselves to it, I think it has made it a tourist attraction and good for business.
Well, I'm curious about that book came out in 1920. It sold an enormous number of copies. The novels before he'd done, it sold 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 copies. And suddenly this book is selling 250,000 copies a year. Why do you think this book struck such a big chord with the rest of the country, and the rest of the world even?
Well, I think there are several reasons. I think it came, the timing was perfect. It came at a moment when the 1920s, that famous era of irreverence and iconoclasm was starting, and Lewis was sort of kicked off this new freedom in literature, and he was, he caught that spirit of irreverence by questioning this institution of the small town, which in American literature, as he says in Main Street, that it had been portrayed sentimentally as a place where all the folks were nice and friendly, and there were beautiful green lawns, and everybody was happy. And he went against this stereotype. He intended to blast it. And so it caught that mood. And it appealed to a lot of people in the big cities, but these were people who had been brought up in small towns. And so they wanted to read about the towns they had come from. And they had an ambivalent attitude, as Lewis did, about their hometowns. Obviously, they got away from there. They went to the city, and they were in the city. There were lots more to do, and they got away from this boring town. Yet it was their home, and they felt a tie to it. And so they appreciated it, and it appealed to these people in the city. And these were people who were trying to be sophisticated urbanites, and a lot of them were the people who bought books anyway, or upper middle class striving to move up. And so there became an expression that grew up, a main streeter. In other words, don't be a main streeter, which meant someone who's provincial and kind of a hick and out of it. And so there was this drive to, if you read this book, you were a sophisticate and you could look down on your small town background. And it also had this debunking gossip quality that was, it lifted the lid on the small town, as other small town novels like Peyton Place did in later eras, but it had that. And it was, also it appealed to women. It had a very strong appeal to women, and through the heroine, Carol. And this is a story of a marriage. It's not only a story of a small town. It's a story of the marriage between Will and Carol. And she's sort of a proto-feminist, and she's rebelling against the constraints of marriage and being a housewife and having nothing to do with her mind, and her attempts to reform the town, while naive, sort of run up against this wall of indifference. And so she's thwarted and frustrated, and then her husband doesn't appreciate her and doesn't really sympathize with her. And you'll remember later in the book, she, after too many quarrels with him, she moves to Washington to take a job there. So he has to win her back, and he does in the end, and you could say that Gopher Prairie wins her back too, because she misses the kindly people there, and she remembers the sense of belonging that she had, and so it's sort of an act of maturity, of acceptance, that she knows she can't be a single woman living in Washington with a child. She's got to go back to her husband and then she conceives another baby, and so she goes back, and she accepts, and she says in the end, "Well, I lost, but I fought the good fight."
It's a
great story there.
It's Storylines Midwest, and if you have a question for Richard Lingaman about Sinclair Lewis, or if you want to share your take on Main Street with us, give us a call. 866-255-2762 is the number. That's 866-255-2762. Richard, how long did Sinclair Lewis's immense popularity in pop culture at the time last?
Well, in a sense, it lasted nearly all his life, but he had some definite ups and downs. The 20s were his great period when he wrote these one sensational book after another, one bestseller after another, Babbitt, Aerosmith, Elmer Gantry, Dodsworth. And then when the 20s finished, it was almost like a phase of his life finished. And then he got the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1930, the first American to win this. And then he always had an inferiority complex, and he felt a great burden of living up to this. And he was sort of drained of inspiration. And he finally wrote another novel, which called Ann Vickers, about a career woman, which did very well. But then as he went into decline, and he came back in the mid-30s when he wrote It Can't Happen Here, an anti-fascist book, which was sensational. And then his career went down again. But then in the 40s, he wrote a book called Cass Timberlane, which was a huge bestseller. And so he always kept bouncing back. And he was usually on the lists of American novelists that people remembered. But after Cass Timberlane and King's Blood Royal, which was a very prescient book about the race crisis in 1946. He went into decline, and then, alas, the writer's curse, alcoholism, finally did him in, and he died in 1951 in Rome.
Richard, we have a woman named Carol in Lansing, Michigan, who has a question for you. Carol, welcome. Yeah.
I'm not sure it's as much a question as a comment.
Very good. We like comments.
I lived in small towns, very small towns, from 1938 until 1967. And so I went through all 12 grades in a small town. And the only Midwestern writer I heard of during those years was Vachel Lindsay. So when I was living in small towns in the 50s and I read Main Street, I was shocked that such subversive literature existed and that I'd never heard of it, you know, and that it expressed a lot of my own experience with living in small towns. Mm-hmm. Even though I'd always lived in them, somehow, well, of course, I'd seen the movies with Rosalind Russell and living in New York, you know, yeah. And that's what I wanted to go to.
Yeah, it's such a true story, Carol, that we've ignored our literature. And Richard, by the 50s, nobody was paying attention to Sinclair Lewis?
Well, I read, didn't he write The Jungle?
No, that's Upton Sinclair.
I was reading these different people that I never heard of before. And Winesburg, Ohio.
Yeah.
Sherwood
Anderson.
Another guy.
Yeah.
Sherwood Anderson.
Yeah.
Well, that's it's a common experience, I think, in that sense, that people keep coming back to Sinclair Lewis. And he did fade out of academic respectability, shall we say, or critical acclaim. But now he's coming back, and teachers are teaching him again. And they talk about teaching him and how people have experiences sort of like your viewer, people from small towns. They say it's... Yeah, that reflects my experiences. Yeah. So he wrote something, he made a picture, as E.M. Forrester said in the 20s, you've taken a slice of Midwestern life and made a picture that all the world can see. And he had this great ability, a photographic ability to describe. And what he said was true then, and it's still a truth today, I think. And so he deserves to last, and he deserves to still touch us, though some of it sounds old-fashioned.
And it's good to have him back. It's good to have him back, and it's good to have a nice big new biography of him coming out in January, Richard Lingelman's biography, Sinclair Lewis, Rebel from Main Street. Richard Lingelman is the senior editor of The Nation, and he is the author of that book, and he'll be that book will be out in January.
Thanks a lot, Richard.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
You're listening to Storylines Midwest, and for more information on Storylines Midwest or the books we're reading, you can visit our website at storylines.ala.org, or of course you can go to your local public library. Participating libraries have copies of the books, program schedules. They also have discussion guides if you want to start a Storylines book club. Coming up in the next half hour of the program, we'll be talking about what small town life in the Midwest is like now. And we'd love to hear from you. The number to call is 866-255-2762. This is Storylines Midwest.
Storylines Midwest is a project of the American Library Association, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities and Barnes & Noble Booksellers.